Agent Robbie, listen, I've been trying to get you on a few American chat shows. Not happening. What about a podcast?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 165 of Sapnin Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and this week we're presenting an episode that will make you stand up and laugh out loud.
Fuck it. This week's guest is my very, very good friend, stand-up comedian, TV presenter, radio presenter, and all-round legend, Tom Deacon.
Yes, now what a CV, Tom Deacon. And just a career this man has, switching from comedy club appearances up and down the country on a regular to being a household TV personality and presenter for countless insane publications. He's worked and done everything from being a host at BBC Radio 1 to traveling across Europe as a deluded football fan for Copper 90, becoming the face of esports, and just has some utterly hilarious and unreal experiences with a lot of famous faces in between. The guy can do it all. He's naturally funny and has a lot of charisma. Huge music fan and someone you've gotten to know very well since the days of the Blackout, Sean.
Yes, we as we discussed later on, yeah, we got invited onto a BBC TV show back when they thought rock was cool. And I ended up meeting Tom and we hit it off. And then I've spent many a night in a comedy club in Cardiff and stuff hanging out. And yeah, he's always been super supportive. He's always been very, very nice. And he's hilarious, as you're about to find out. So I'm chuffed for him. I'm chuffed he's got to do all this. He deserves all this. He deserves much more. To me, he's one of my favourite presenters in the world, if not even just the UK. So I know the head of the BBC, whatever his name is, listens to this. So you should get Tom as the presenter of Match of the Day. I don't know. I couldn't think of another big presenting job.
To be fair, he'd absolutely love that. And he brings a smile to people's faces, so
yes,
why not?
He does.
And literally, as you mentioned, that 519 show he did is pure chaos. Probably got away with a lot of seamless. You couldn't today, but we're going to dive into all of that, from Tom's humble beginnings to some secrets behind the art of comedy, embarrassing himself in front of people like Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, and the Jonas Brothers, the success of Eurofan, and how a basic day at work for him can involve just sitting on a sofa with Robbie Williams and Arsenal legend Thierry Henry.
Yeah, it's mad stories, isn't it? It's fucking loads of mad stories. But yeah, thanks to Tom for coming on. It literally took a text, even though we have been talking about doing it for months.
We have, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, thanks for coming on. He was absolutely awesome. Yeah, it's just, look at everything he's done. Edinburgh stand-up, BBC Two, Radio One, Capital FM Breaky Show, also Gfinity Sports, Copper 90 that had over 8 million views. Formula One Esports, Dave's One Night Stand, where he had the best intro music of any comedian's ever had. And that's not just by me. That's not me saying it. That was actually what every comedian in the world voted was the best intro track of all time, which just happens to have been by a band called The Blackout, and the song's called Higher and Higher. But yes, yeah, we have a good time on this, and I think you can hear me and you smiling throughout. To be honest, it's been a tough last couple of weeks. We thought new year, new us, new start. Yes, here we go. And then some shit happened behind the scenes personally. And yeah, it was good to speak to Tom in the middle of that, going on to cheer us up and myself up. So yes, thanks, Tom, for coming on. We had a great time.
Yes, it's just lovely to hear different kinds of stories as well from different aspects of entertainment. And he is a music fan and everything like that is in there as well. But that's one thing we're going to be trying in 2022 is to get even more outrageous left field guests. So if you have any suggestions of who you'd like to hear on future episodes of Sapling Podcast, head over to our Twitter and Instagram pages at Sapling Pod and give us a cheeky message.
That's at SAPP. I'm writing this down as I'm saying it. ENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. Get in touch with us. Give us guest ideas. Give us question ideas. Tell us to shut the fuck up. Tell Morgan he needs a new co-host. Whatever you are thinking, let us know, as long as it isn't racist or nasty about my parents.
That's fair game, I think. But also, please go and visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapmin, because literally, by you signing up to that platform and becoming a member, not only do you get loads of like extra rewards and you get bonus podcasts and you get behind the scene kind of look into things, you get us commenting on day-to-day news and all that kind of shit in a wonderful group of a community that you want to get involved with, but also it helps keep this thing going. So if you like Sapnin Podcast, you like having us around, patreon.com/sapnin, please.
Especially with the new news that the Conservative government wants to get rid of the BBC. Guess what? The BBC's gone, so that'll be BBC Podcast and BBC Sound's gone. So, why not keep us afloat? Check out patreon.com/sapnin, even though we won't be affected by the BBC being closed down by the Tories. But hey, subscription services seem to be the new thing. So get on board now. Please, listen. I tried to say it all nice and fancy, right? And it worked. Please join the Patreon. I'm starving, man. I'm starving.
Oh, right.
Get off it.
To steal one of Tom's favourite phrases, let's get among it and have Tom Deacon on Sapling Podcast, episode 165.
Did you say let's get among it or amongst it?
Yes, amongst it, innit? Yeah, I fucked that up.
No, no, ta-da. Stop it. Yes, keep at it, you fucker.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin!
I'll let it go, Tom. I'll let it go all day. All day I'll let this go.
What's happened?
Fuck off!
You just said to me, you're not as cool as them, so I kept quiet.
No. You are as cool as them. So, yes. So, look, I got to break the podcast magic now. So, basically, I said to Tom beforehand, we're going to shout Sapnin now. It's up to you whether you do. Brandon Boyd did, and Dave Lombardo from Slayer did. And then I told him, he's not as cool as them, so he should do it. But no, he hasn't done it. And I had a lovely intro written out from him that he I'm did. Just going to veer away from now.
He did.
Right? Sapnin!
So, no, it's too fucking late. Reel it in. Calm down with the excitement. This week's guest is TV and radio presenter, comedian, all-round good egg, and he seriously needs an update to his website. It's Tom Deacon!
Thank you so much for having me. I genuinely was Googling at the same time, which is really unprofessional, and also checking that I was technically recording myself. So, guys, I'm sorry I missed the Sapnin bit.
You knew what you were doing.
I could turn back time. I can't. That was a lovely introduction, Sean. Thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you, Morgan. So thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time, man. We've wanted to do this for a while. Sean has mentioned before that there's quite a few stories between you two, and I'm excited to get into what is a hell of a career and resume you have in the world of comedy and presenting. So.
That's very kind, Morgan. It's all gone downhill now. The week was absolutely clear until this came about. And then that just really cheered me up. I was like, oh, yeah, like reeling out old granddad. Remember the good old days? So I'm excited to be here. And also, I like the fact that Sean basically crowbarred me in and Morgan's got, yeah, fine, all right, we'll have him on. That's fine.
Not at all. We've been talking about doing this one since we began, really. It's just been, just working out the time to do it. And because early on we wanted to do more bands and stuff, and now we just want to do people we like more than anything, I think. So Tom.
Yes.
For people not listening, could you tell us, not listening, oh my God, for people listening who might be unaware of you, how they're unaware of you, I do not know, but could you explain, how did we first meet?
Okay, well there is an easier question to answer, because I would have previously answered you by saying, I'm the guy that's done some things that you'll go, oh, really? That's really cool. But I don't fit what the image you have in your head. What I've done throughout my career is change how I look quite a lot so that people can't follow me or track me down. Now, that sounds suggestive. It sounds like I've done some bad things. Look, we've all made mistakes, but I am clean. I've got no criminal record. I started yet. Off yet. If the week and my career doesn't pick up, I will go about. I've got a little book of people I didn't like working with, and I'll go and get them. No, but Sean, you were one of my favorite people to meet. I met you in the Blackout whilst I was hosting the 519 show, which was a very, very incredibly popular, never won an award and should have done show, which was live 519. Picture it at 519. It was live on the internet, a live show. It was kind of ahead of its time. It was a mixture of a mad, crazy Japanese TV show that you see and with bands on, guests, and I was the host of it. And then after about a year, they brought in a brilliant co-host for me, AJ Adudu, who's now broken her foot, I think, on Strictly. So she's not in it anymore. But that's how we met. And you were a band, you came to a tiny little basement room. And the beautiful thing was, I really got on with you. And I was like, oh, this is what presenting's all about. It's about having a, you know, good crack with the guest you're hanging out with. I think we went for a drink afterwards. I was like, this is amazing. This is living. And we've stayed in touch ever since.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, but yeah, it turns out that's not the same with every band. It was just you guys and presenting's a lie.
No, I will say this because honestly, that's the best thing about doing, you said about getting people on that you like and you love, you know, spending time with. Throughout my career of doing stand-up comedy, presenting, being on radio, the people that you connect with the most, you have the most fun with, and you go, this isn't really a job anymore. This is just me having fun. Oh, amazing. Look at my bank account. I got paid. This is incredible. So when I met you in the blackout, I was like, I think they actually like me. I think I might hang out with them. This is great. And we've done that ever since. So and most people turn up, they're the full PR, the, you know, they've got their PR agent in the corner of the room. You can't say this, you can say that. And that isn't a fun day, but you still go, oh, I met Justin Bieber. That was pretty cool. But there was no chance of going for a milkshake afterwards.
No. Well, who else was on the 519 show? Because I saw a JLS were on it. I don't know if
everybody in love. You had everyone back then. Taylor Swift, I saw. Like, everyone who was literally massive in, like, 2009, 2008.
Well, I don't like to brand myself as one of 2009's biggest stars, but that was fucking years ago, and I should be dead by now. Jesus Christ.
It is mad when you look back. Honestly, for people who've never watched it, don't bother. But just imagine it. Imagining it is better. It was a basement in the BBC. I think you had Louis Theroux in level 3 of the building and we were in the basement and it was like knocking on the door to go, would anybody like to come and be part of the audience today? And people would be like, no. And then we started getting guests on, like Pixie Lott before she had a number one hit, I think, came on the show. We had, like you say, everyone, Justin Bieber, before he really took off, he was already a sensation, came over with his whole entourage, security. And I'm sat on this ropey old sofa having a chat with him. The best thing, and I look back on it, we had a Lexus on Fire come in one day.
Wow.
What?
Which was insane. I had a picture with them and I was like, they were really nice blokes. Not as nice as the Blackout. Snogs is awesome. Yes. He was my number one out of the band. And then you had...
He's a lot of people's number one.
Well, he's great, you know. And then about 2 years later, I'm listening to City and Colour going, I'm in a sad mood. Oh, yeah. Running with scissors or whatever. And then I went, hang on, who's this lad? Dallas Green. He said, Alexa's on Fire. And then I immediately was like, I've met Dallas Green, aka City and Colour, and I didn't even realise. Like, if only I could go back in time and I'd be now like a proper little fangirl, just saying, I really love your tracks. I really like them. But we had Temper Trap come in. Oh, the full works. And when they arrived, they went, well, we need to sack our PR person. Why are we here? But yet, that was the magic of it. And then... that's what took me on to go and do Radio 1. I brought the 519 show onto Radio 1. And it was on BBC Two on a Saturday as well, the 519 show. So yeah, it was cheap. It was bonkers. And it gave me my break, I guess. So I'm very grateful for it.
Was Justin Bieber the one that had the most kind of entourage or anything come in? Or did someone top that? Or did someone have something a little bit weirder?
We normally had quite a lot of... like grime artists that would come down and they would bring an unnecessary amount of entourage and there weren't enough seats for the crew there. But I remember doing a show where looking around, I just look around the room and I'm just seeing people look awkwardly, like leaning against the wall in a tiny little basement. His name will come to me, but that was bonkers. And also what was... like Jedward, like why were they on the show? Like they were huge. We felt we hit the jackpot when like Jed would have come in here and I wish they hadn't. God, they were tedious and annoying. They were awful.
Isn't it mad to think that back then, like, you were like, fucking hell, Jed would have come on, but you had Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, look at him now. Yeah. Look at him now.
Unbelievable.
It's mad. When Justin Bieber came along and he was, I don't know how old he was, maybe like 14, 13 tops. And he had this huge security with him. And I was like, oh, Justin, is it okay? I just get an autograph from my cousin, who's a big fan of yours, and the autobiography book. And he's only 14. And so he signs it. He looks at this gold pen and he looks at me, he goes, and then he looks at his security. He's like, I like this pen, and threw it to his security. Right. And I bought that right from WH Smith's. And that is an expensive gold and silver combo. I think it was about £8, and he's robbed it off me. And never forget that. You never forget the moment when someone steals a pen off you. Justin Bieber. So
Justin Bieber owes you a pen. I can't believe.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Well, we'll bring this up with him when he comes on, I guess. When he eventually comes on, because he's bound to remember it. No, everybody remembers their first gold and silver pen. So
I reckon he's still got it. I reckon he carries it with him every single day as a reminder.
That what if it turns out he's written all his hits with our pen?
Well, that means Tom's due like royalties, surely.
Yeah, it was gold a magic royalties. Pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally.
Baby royalties.
One of the mad things about it, though, if you imagine, so I didn't listen to a lot of the pop artists that we would interview in my everyday life. And I was going up and down the country doing stand-up comedy clubs where I was, you know, dropping C-bombs here, F-bombs, and obviously I wouldn't dream of doing it while I was at the BBC. But I had this kind of alter ego. I was like the 5:19 show host. At 5:19, as soon as we were off air, I'm on a train heading up to Leeds, Birmingham, wherever I was gigging, and then cussing, swearing, doing my material. So I was kind of like two different people. And what was mad about that is the pop artist that we had on, like the squeaky cleanness, kind of the vibe that it was. That was quite odd to kind of go through. Then you would be chatting to Selena Gomez, and next thing you got Taylor Swift on. And then I'm telling someone in a crowd, he's an absolute wanker. You know what I mean? Like I'm just,
yeah.
My head was screwed. But what we did have was so many great guests on that all brought something. And yeah, but it was great. What did you make of it then, Sean, when you came?
Oh, I loved it. I felt like it had a big breakfasty vibe, to nod back to the breakfast, I guess. Yeah, it was fun. I just remember like you and AJ were fun. Like, because we'd done other things where, like, we'd done, like, local news and stuff, and everybody's so serious all the time, and they're all like, oh, well, do we have the blackout from Earth or two? And it's just so boring. But this was, like, a breath of fresh air, I guess, to everything we'd kind of done prior to that. And for us to be kind of considered as, like, it was probably one of the first times we were considered as a viable musical artist, maybe, rather than just, like, some goths from over there. Like, there was like, oh, the Blackout are on this thing that also the massive Jedward are on. Maybe Sean could be the third member of Jedward if he keeps going. This is what I was thinking at the time. But yeah, it like that sadly never came about. But
you imagine, Morgan, and everyone listening, that we had this feature on the show, which was called Which is the Nib, right? It put it into context for you. You got a band on that out of nowhere, I would turn to them and say, which is the nib? And I'd hold a biro at them, which has got two lids on. you had no way of knowing which end the nib was, right? So the whole audience that were from upstairs at BBC Switch, which was a kind of website, they had like Kelly Osbourne on, this weird sort of world. I'm shouting at people, which is the nib? Which is the nib? Right. After I'd asked them, oh, tell me about your new single. And then I would shout at them, which is the nib? And I think the Blackout really, yeah, as guys really got on board and got it. But you know what? What I was trying to say about the squeaky teen thing was, I remember going along to Leicester Square for the Jonas Brothers movie coming out. And Disney contacted me and said, oh, would you like to introduce to these incredible fans who have been so lucky to be there at the premiere? Would you like to introduce the Jonas Brothers on stage, which isn't a stage, it's just a cinema in the middle of Leicester Square? And I said, yeah, of course. I did not know. I've never heard screams like it. Yeah. Right? They were at the height of their fame. And I walk out and you've got all these girls, like it's mainly predominantly girls. I'm not, you know, saying, I'm sure there was a couple of lads there as well who were very excited for the Jonas Brothers. I met them about 2 minutes before. I was like, hi, I'm Tom. I don't know what the names are, Billy, Bob, whatever their names were. Nice lads.
That's him.
Yeah, but I don't trust anybody who says croissant. So anyway, they were there. And then I walk out and I'm saying, guys, thank you so much for coming to the premiere. A bit of rustling, a bit of excitement. And then I say, just as a treat, actually, would anybody like to meet the Jonas Brothers? And I'm sure you've had it at a gig, Sean, like the noise went into my head. I couldn't actually hear myself think. Like it's that real, it's gone beyond something where my body was like, I was having a panic attack. I didn't know what was happening. And I went, here they are. And no one heard. And they walked on, waved at everybody, and then left. And you're just like, what is this world? And then I'm being told to get off the stage in London about an hour later. And I'm like, guys, you don't know the power that I have. I just introduced the Jonas Brothers on stage. So
respect me. I know Nick. I've met Nick, I think one of them's called.
Other times that Sean's been part of my life, not only going to Cardiff to meet up after the Glee performing at stage was also, do you remember doing the Zoo, was it called Zoo 8 Festival? It's voted as one of the top 10 worst music festivals ever.
Where, was that because we were on it though?
There's more to it than that. There was a water shortage. One of the stages wasn't safe, health and safety wise. I think Dizzy Rascal pulled out last minute. So everyone was there looking very feral, like a refugee camp. And I think in the background, I was interviewing Funeral for a Friend, who were lovely, really nice lads. And I think you were there, Sean, you must have been. And we went on a safari little quick because it was at a zoo.
How have I?
It sounds like a dream, to be honest. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
to you.
If the show was as bad as the festival you're describing, I've probably. I'm on about us, Tom. What do you mean? You watched us and we were that bad?
No. Do you know what? I don't even know whether you performed. You were going to perform, but everything got cancelled. It was one of those gigs where a lot of artists arrived. And then things got cancelled and I think you were genuinely just there. And then we went on a safari little tour around the zoo because it was in an actual zoo. For the fans attending, they were treated like zoo animals and then you had actual zoo animals. Madness. So Morgan, I basically kept bumping into Sean Reading and Leeds Festival when I was doing the comedy there. So yeah.
Yeah, but speaking of that kind of like a juxtaposition from those early days as well between the comedy and presenting, really, you've combined that a lot throughout your career. And just looking at some of like the highlights of jobs in the past, like obviously you've worked for BBC Radio 1, you've done loads of football and sport orientated stuff with BT and obviously Southampton and all that, which we will get into. But just kind of presenting versus comedy, do you really see it as a different side to you for both? Like, what's the kind of different aspects for you getting into those two different roles?
I think it was just an audience. It's just another audience. If I really think about it, and it's not the first time I've been asked this, and I should really learn a stock answer. but yeah, how I feel about it, I think my mind changes on it all the time. And where I'm currently at is when I'm presenting, I've still got an audience. So I know I'm not being the stand-up comic, but I'll still try and have a few, because it's in my nature. I'll try and crack a joke here and there, which is not appropriate all the time, but that's in my nature. And that's kind of how my presenting style is. But then stand-up is kind of a different part of me that when I'm on stage and it's going really well, I'm like, why is this not being filmed? More people need to see this, you know? the presenting is part of my brain, whether it's the learning the lines, interviewing people. I think they're all part of, or maybe I learned my stand-up became a little bit more like my presenting style, quite conversational with crowds. So maybe they went hand in hand together. But I think being a good presenter or a good interviewer is building up a rapport quite quickly. And I've always been good at that. Not every gig. Some people definitely back me up on that. You were terrible at that one. But I was able to build up a quick rapport. I was likable, always likable, I guess. So, but yeah, I loved both of them. Presenting pays far more and stand-up comedy doesn't, but I love being a stand-up comic. So, you know, it's hard making a living as a stand-up. It's the number one question taxi drivers tend to ask. What do you do then? Stand-up. Can you make a living out of that? How are you finding Uber, mate? How are you finding Uber these days? You know, we just fire something back just to wind him up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, was it like, so ever since I've known you, I've just felt that you are a comedian. Was that, or you've always wanted to be a comedian? Was that what it was growing up? So it's comedian first and then whatever after then.
I definitely wanted to be a stand-up comic. I've been going to watch it. Like, my stepdad really got me into comedy, watching different acts, going to watch live comedy as much as I could down where I lived in Southampton. And then when I went to university, I was like, I want to do stand-up comedy. And people were like, yeah, but the one thing is you're not funny. And I was like, oh, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to work hard at this. So I started doing the middle spot or the new act part. And it wasn't until I met Tom Stade at a particular gig. And I'd watched him, like, when you're into something, you just consume everything. So I'm watching the Comedy Store Live where Tom Stade was on. And he had this, if you've not watched Tom Stade, definitely go and watch him. And
is he the American chap?
Yeah. He's
I met him at the Kerrang Awards once, I think.
He's Canadian, kind of like.
Oh, sorry.
Don't offend me. But if he's listening, he will be furious.
It's like when people say, like, we've had guests on and go, oh yeah, I can't wait to come back to England, and I'm like,
right, ooh.
Who's you, motherfucker?
but he always appears like he's pretty high. Amazing comic. And it wasn't till I'd just done 10 minutes on stage and I knew he was the headliner, and he was at the back of the room. He's like, pretty funny, Tommy. I liked your stuff. And I was like, oh, cool. And I was just at university and he was like, hey, Tommy, do you smoke pot? And I was like, I don't, I guess, now, Tom. And he was like, what if you do, you know, maybe we could have a chat after the show. I got to go on now. And then off he went. And then I went upstairs and was just absorbing all this knowledge from Tom Stade. And then the promoter there was like, are you serious about being a comic? And I was like, yes. And then that's how I was then the MC pretty much all the time there. And then went on to do a competition. But yes, stand-up comedy is what I wanted to do. And, to still do it now is pretty cool. I haven't got found out, but that's how I think everyone's brain is as a comic. You're like, one day I'm going to get found out, and then that'll be shit.
Well, as a comedian, let me ask you this, because this is something I've always wanted to know. Obviously, you're a diehard music fan. You're massively into all sorts of bands and stuff. But like, when you're writing, when you're thinking of material for jokes and whatnot, do you sometimes feel like bands just write one good song and people want them to play it for 30 years afterwards? That's the one, that's all you need is one mega hit. If you have one really good joke, you can't really say it again, because especially nowadays, if it's gone viral and stuff, do you feel like it's harder to come up with material, or you find that you just read in rooms and thinking things up on the spot? Like, how's that process?
No, I'm not envious of bands. I know that you're like, if an audience have seen you before, they'll be furious. They're like, oh yeah, I saw you do that bit. And you almost, as a comic, like, I'm sorry. I mean, most of the rest of us changed. And they're like, yeah. But you did repeat that bit. Because I think the illusion burst that we're making it up on the spot for a lot of people, and we're not. We write the stuff, we'll try it out at certain gigs and then perfect it. And then not do it for a couple of years and then go back to a gig and go, I'm going to redo that bit. And they go, I saw this bit. And I was like, yeah, but I haven't been doing it for the last two. Anyway, and bands are talented. They learn how to play a musical instrument and I didn't. So for that reason, it is difficult. It is difficult. I think you have to be passionate about something to write about it, or something happens and you elaborate on it. But then what you do as a comic is you don't push yourself anymore. So like Edinburgh Festival, and that's a way to get around it, Morgan. So I haven't done the Edinburgh Festival or written a new show for a while, and therefore I can get away with not changing my material. but it is something I do need to work at. I think if whether you're a musician or I don't know, whatever you do, you keep working at it. And the times when you're not working at it, you know that you're getting a bit stale. And as a performer, I might have a really, really good gig and my girlfriend will be like, oh, how was it? And I'll be like, yeah, but I know I can do that material. I know that can go really well. I want to work on the new stuff and I want that to work. And she's like, well, why don't you do it? And it's easier said than done, because you do not want to die on stage, or you don't want it to go wrong. But if you, unless you do push yourself, you don't write new stuff. So, and then for me, my material or style is always about what's happening in my life right now. So, moving into a new house and getting a dog, and I write this stuff down and I'm like, oh, that's really funny. And then my girlfriend's like, why didn't you try it? And I was like, cause I don't think anyone wants to hear about this shit. So the writing process can be away from the stage and then having the bottle to go and do it. So, it's tough. Sometimes it's easier.
Yeah. How many times do you rewrite the joke, or is there one that you've got that you've written 10,000, or is there a joke that you've got that you haven't said on stage yet that you've been trying for ages to finish?
There was one for a while which was about giving up sugar, that classic rock and roll stuff that I talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the big laughs, giving up sugar.
Yeah. Hey guys, anybody ever try to give up sugar? Damn, it's Moorish, am I right? It's more addictive than cocaine, am I right? Anyway, so I tried to give up sugar, and my girlfriend
by swapping it for cocaine.
Yeah, and actually, I've lost a lot of weight as well.
Yeah. I've noticed I get more tasks done. Yeah, I'm more focused. Yeah.
I'm very alert. I'm really into stuff. Guys, let's do this more. Let's not stop. Let's do the tidying up of the new house, and let's not stop. Let's not stop tidying up. Why is the
vacuum? Oh, here's a good idea. I've had a good idea. Here's a good idea.
Yeah. Let's pull off the skirting board because we need to paint all the wall. Listen, I do a bit of material about sugar, and the whole concept was I had a dream. I'd given it up for 3 days and I was really struggling. And part of that relationship that I love, when you're in a relationship, the person you love taunts you a little bit, like, you're going to fail, you're not going to survive this, and just eat the sugar, you know, stop moaning about it. Everyone, no one wants to hear about you've had 3 days given up all sugar. And I'm talking nature's candy as well, so fruit. And I had a dream, and basically
sorry, you had me then. Yeah, no, I knew. Yeah, when he said nature's candy, I knew what you were talking about. But yeah, nature's candy. So fruit. Yeah, carry on. Sorry, you had me then. Sorry.
Well, you know. Anyway, so I gave it up and I have a dream. And in that dream, I walked towards a man who's naked and was erect, and he had hundreds of thousands on his penis. So I tell this story on stage, and it's a genuine true story. And basically I put the big D in my mouth, but I took it all the way. I took it all the way because I was trying to get to the area towards the back bit, which has got the most surface area. So I'm trying to explain this story, and there's little punchlines in it. And honestly, for a good 5 or 6 gigs, couldn't get, people were just like, why are you telling us this? But
this is therapy, Tom.
Yeah, but there is a punchline. There is all of this, blah, blah, blah. But it takes a while. So I'm not a comic that writes down the pullback. I don't write the joke out. I act it out. I suppose that lends itself to my presenting style. I'm with the audience telling them stuff and then going, that's a great way to say it. Try and say it the same way next time. And then I add in little things because I improvise bits.
And so then, do you ever write anything down?
No. So I worry about, you know, forgetting shit a lot. I have a notebook where at the gig I'll jot down a keyword. So sugar, that is a reminder of putting a dick in my mouth. And then I'll to a keyword. And then because I'll then go to the next gig afterwards and go, that worked really well. So write down the word. So basically, if you go back to a material book from 2 years ago, I look like Rain Man because all I've done is from one gig to another, I've just written down the same keywords and then added a bit. Oh, say this line that works, and then turn the page. And then I've got another bit, same words written down. Oh, that bit, don't do this bit. So it's kind of like a year later, I'm not doing the same set, but it's changed. And then I have to kind of go back and listen to recordings of myself to go, why have I stopped saying that joke? That's really funny. But it's always sort of changing. Is my excuse. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically your comedy is like your hair, because that's always changing as well from some of the very big emo hair I've seen from back in the day as well.
Yeah, it was some long hair, and for no good reason, I grew a soul patch.
I remember that the flavor saver. The flavor saver. Yeah, when you're eating stuff, it saves the flavor of later. I was watching. I was watching the Dave's One Night Stand earlier, where you came on to some brilliant. I don't know what the intro music was, but fucking what a rocking riff I was. If I was anybody listening to this,
Yeah,
if I was everybody listening to this, I'd go and listen to that after this, I would.
100%. But I remember telling you, they were like, what intro music do you want? And I was like, who do I like? The Blackout. I'll have them. And it made me feel cool as I walked out.
Oh, no, but I was blown away because I watched that on TV. And I remember going, that's a fucking song. Because like, we'd been on a couple of things. I think the only other thing... It was probably a year or two later. We were on an advert for Duck Dynasty. Remember that program? That got me excited as well. But your hair on that one night stand is Lego-ish, should we say?
Yeah. I think there was an era of it. I remember.
We all had it. We all had a mad fringe and a
good mate of mine, Chris Ramsey. When we were living together in Edinburgh with Ed Gamble as well. What a weird setup!
What a house that is.
Yeah, Chris Ramsey, Jimmy McGee, who's a fantastic comic as well, and Ed Gamble. Just like that was a highlight. That was one of the best Edinburghs I ever had. And then Chris would always have the straighteners on, and he'd be like, mate, or his GHDs weren't working. I was like, I'll lend you mine, mate. I mean, we were cool dudes. but yeah, I remember that. That was Greg Davies. Roisin Conaty was the other act on. And she didn't have a particularly good set, which in the world of comedy, there's no meritocracy. Like, it doesn't matter how good you're doing. And I'm not just saying this of Roisin because I think she's fantastic, but you could be smashing gigs up and down the country and people do not give a fuck. Like, TV producers or anything like that don't care. You're either the right fit, what they're looking for. And I've not even got to the stage where I'm ripping all the rooms. But when I do, I'll still complain about the fact I've not been on TV recently. But I got this opportunity. Dave's One Night Stand, come on with Greg Davies. And the warm-up was Ed Gamble. You had Jason Cook was the actual warm-up. But Ed Gamble went on before anyone else. And just like, it's incredible to see where he's at now and stuff like that. But yeah, some odds choices. Chinos, an odd top, a jumper actually, and some dodgy
New York jumper. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I used to have which I used to say, oh, I've not even been to New York. There's something stupid about I'd go, oh yeah, this top, yeah, never even been to New York, and then I'd move on. But yeah. That is weird because I don't own a dog. Give me one sec. No one else had a delivery at 12:45 in the morning before. I mean, in the afternoon. That's why the dog went nuts. But you know what was weird about that Dave's One Night Stand. You're going to do 20 minute set. They're going to edit it down to 12 minutes. And I had to write up every blimmin' joke that I was going to do. And about a minute or two into doing that laborious task, because I don't write down my material, I was like, I might not do this. I can't be bothered. I cannot be bothered. And then I was like, how much am I getting for this? They were like, quite a lot. And I was like, I'll type that out.
That's wicked. What's the check? Oh yeah, okay, fair. Yeah. Fair enough.
And then doing the only other TV bit was a Rob Brydon's show, where Tom Jones was on that night and David Williams.
That's nice. Yeah. That's not unusual.
Right, thank you very much. That was Tom Deacon. I'm off. See you later, boys. Fucking hell, Morg, you absolute prick. Did you get to meet Sir Tom?
Yeah, he came to the door of his dressing room and I said, hi, I'm Tom. He says, I'm Tom. And then that was it. Bit of bants, isn't it? we had a great time. Like, at that point, I just like, I know we're going to be mates. And that's the thing. Like I said at the beginning, though, it's all about this, the job that I've done presenting, is when you meet someone, you're like, oh, I'd love to go for a pint with them or hang out a little bit longer. The Jeff Bridges. Now, there is the coolest guy that I was like, oh, can I hang out a little bit longer with you? And I think I ruined it by asking, oh, by the way, can I get an autograph for my mum? Big fan of Tron from the 80s. Yeah. But like, you know, when
she's got all, yeah, she's got all the outfits. She fucking loves a bit of neon. She's wild.
What would you say is like the maddest experience with that? Like being in the same presence of someone or working with an opportunity that you were just like, how the hell am I got here? Like, how the hell am I in the same room as Tom Jones or Justin Bieber? Like, is there anything like that that comes to mind?
Well, I'm doing Radio 1 when I, maybe, I don't know how I ended up on Radio 1. It was because Radio 1 at the time were trying to sound and get more young people listening. So, and oddly enough, Sean is the reason I got that job, because I got him on to do a demo, didn't I, Sean? I was like, oh, would you mind doing this demo? And I'd done two before. And then this one, I was like, just, my producer has always said to me at Radio 1, they're like, just be yourself. And I'm like, I can't swear though. And they're like, yeah, yeah, but minus that, just be the, and that was one thing that I always struggled with. It was like being yourself. What is myself? What's my unique selling point? All of that, those jargon words. But yeah, I did a demo with Sean, loved it, had a lot of fun. And they were like, brilliant. That is great. And I was like, oh, you really liked it. And they're like, yeah, but we'd like you to do a teen based show. And I was like, oh God. Which was hard. Again, it was being that two personalities, I guess. But all the people we'd meet there, just the other DJs like Zane Lowe or Fern Cotton or Joe Wiley, you know, Pete Tong was in the building. And it, like Giles Peterson, I'd be meeting all these people going, I shouldn't be here. How am I here? So you get that kind of imposter syndrome. And I'm surprised that lasted as long as I did on there. But lots of celebs, like huge people like Katy Perry, chatting to Katy Perry, and you're just like, that's mad. Like, you're Katy Perry. And then what? And then my mouth's moving and I've asked a stupid question. She just looks at me at a PR like, who's this guy? And I'm like, I know. I asked the same things.
I like the idea of, that Radio 1 demo. They were like, oh, this is brilliant. Tom, this is the demo you've sent in. I really, really love this. I love your aura. I love the energy you're giving off. I even love the fact that you've done a Welsh accent all the way through it. And if I had the wrong fucking person, oh, it was meant to be me.
No, I was, but then, you know, you came on the show a few times, Sean, and it's mad, Morgan, like to feel like this lad from Southampton and all my mates. I remember the first day, like first ever radio show was back in 2010, and my football team, my beloved Southampton, were at Wembley that day, and that was going to be my first show. And so they won in a very mediocre competition called the Johnston's Paint Trophy. they beat Carlisle 4-1, and I'm watching it on telly, going, "I'm about to talk to the nation this evening," and I didn't get to go to Wembley, but it was just mad to be in those circles, and everyone was like incredibly lovely. But yeah, I always got starstruck, like just walking into Radio 1, you're just like. But you had to tell yourself, you belong here. And don't forget, don't swear.
Did you ever make any major faux pas? Like on last week's episode of this podcast, we had Grant from Feeder on.
Mm.
And I asked him the question, and I genuinely swear on my life, did not mean it to come out like this. I said, because I've been asking other bands, do you remember a moment that you were like, oh fuck, we're like a big band now? Right. But I said to Grant, who doesn't like the song Buck Rogers by Feeder, right? I said to him, was there a moment that you were like, boys, I think we're going to make it? And that's a lyric from that song. And it, he nearly walked off. He nearly walked off. But he was a good sport. But yeah, was there any moments where you interviewed somebody and you were like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have asked that? Or
there is. This is the terror. This is the worst anecdote because I can always feel it in my head. You're like, you don't know the name of the band, so this is going to be terrible, Tom. One that comes to mind. I was getting on quite well with Taylor Swift,
that's a sentence.
Yeah, we were chatting, you know, just rapporting. And she was like, that's quite long hair. And I'm like, yeah, what do you make of the silly moustache that goes with it? She's like, the what? And I was like, don't worry about it. And we're getting on. We're chatting about vintage shopping and stuff like that. She was into that at the time. And then the next time I met her or interviewed her, I said, oh, is there any chance we could go on a date? This was live on Radio 1. And she said, oh, tell your girlfriend I say hi, Tom. Boo. Yeah, that was a fight. I did it obviously for the joke side of things, but at the same time, if she'd have said yes,
imagine you could have been Tom Swift, no?
I would have lost my own name. That's how powerful she is.
Well, yeah, obviously she's not taking anybody else's name, is she? It's like, imagine if you married Beyonce, she'd always be, she wouldn't be Beyonce Deacon moving forward, would she? She'd be Beyonce.
I've remembered. Do you remember the Hoosiers?
Oh, yes. By Mr. A and all that, yeah.
Yeah, well, they came to the basement at 519 and the lead singer's walking up because they were recording a bit for BBC Two for the show to go out. And I walked up to him as he was walking past. And I just, oh. And I went to say, was it a one-take wonder? But what I actually said... was it a one-hit wonder? And... he looked at me with such disdain and I didn't realize what I'd said. But I had there was no malice in it. I genuinely was like, you know, as a presenter, when you get it in one take, you know, rather than lots of retakes. So telling a band that was a one hit wonder, idiot, Tom.
Well, yeah, either that was a faux pas or you were psychic.
I'd say who really didn't get on board with that vibe was the Two Door Cinema Club. I think they chilled out a bit more. They were very serious blokes. Really lovely. Loved their music. Went and watched them live. Great. But just stared. I think we had to stop the interview. several occasions.
Yeah. We had one of them once on this podcast where we were like, oh, fuck this. The interview's over then.
I know that I'm just throwing this out now because knowing that was going on the Sapnin podcast, sort of what's ludicrous, what awkward moments have I had in my career? And there's been quite a lot, but what I've done, and I'm sure everybody does this, I've really buried them deep. And it's not until you get on a podcast and someone says, oh, so tell me about this, that you suddenly remember them. And there's an inner me saying, fuck off. Go back into the darkness. Don't
sorry, Tom.
Don't shed any light.
Sorry for that.
I remember, and it's still probably online, the day that Gareth Gates came in. Now, Gareth Gates had a stammer, right? And would stutter and try and get his words out, but he was cured, wasn't he? Well, that's what we thought. So
wasn't he cured? Yeah, he was cured by Jordan, wasn't he?
No.
or was that much later? Didn't he start having sex with Jordan and then his stammer disappeared? I'm sure that's...
It can work miracles, Jordan, but in other ways, it can really ruin a career, as Dane Bowers will test you. So it giveth and taketh away all in
one. Yeah. The power of Jordan.
Right. So
Gareth Gates comes in, right? And I'm not making fun of his stutter or his stammer at all. But I want you to put into the context, he's come on to talk about maybe a new album or he was performing in a West End show. So he's come in, but unfortunately, he's a bit tired. And one thing that happens if you're under the weather or you're tired, stammer or stutter might come out a bit more. So we're going live in 10, 9. And we had a nice chat with him. He seemed really good. We're live. And the stammer comes back. So the whole reason he's told the media, the press are like, he's lost his stutter. It's gone. It's gone. And then live in a show, I'm watching a man not be able to get his words out. And the camera keeps panning to me live.
Oh.
And one thing you're not supposed to do is finish the sentence for him. So I'm like, I could have helped him at several points. I felt like a strict parent. No, you'll do this on your own. Like,
can finish his own sentences.
So I'm sat there, mortified, and the camera crew and everyone that I can see in the corner of my eye is panicking, like, what do we do? This is a live show. This is a big deal. Gareth Gates is there, and he cannot get the words out at all. So we cut to a VT, and then immediately, as soon as we're off air, for that minute, he's just like, fuck, 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 fuck. He can get that word out. And then at which point...
It's Tourette's, it's fine.
Mate, honest, like, as a presenter, I didn't know what to do in that moment. And it's still on. I wasn't a presenter when I started that show, but I learned how to be one by making these moments make you or break you. And I was broken after that show, like, the whole world's going to see it. And they didn't, but now I've told people to watch it. It is.
but that's the thing with an incident like that, because it's something he's tried to work on. And obviously, there's been a whole stigma around it, and he's tried to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And he's going to be really self-conscious. So when it's coming back, you must be thinking like all sorts, because you don't want to embarrass him and you don't want to make him feel bad. But at the same time, you've got all this pressure of people looking at you. And
sometimes when you're in an interview or you're chatting, your head's going a million miles an hour. And I'm there thinking, we've brought his stammer back. Like, oh, like, we're going to get sued or something. Or and the other part, I'm like, this is awful. This is awful for him. I feel so much for him. Like, and then there's another part of me, this is my career over. This is over. Like, no one's going to. And I've watched it back once, like, watching, you know, when you're like, oh, mate, it was bad for everyone and it was uncomfortable. But one hell of an experience that sends shivers down my spine, that particular interview.
My God, alive. I thought I brought this stammer back. That's the fucking quote of this. I thought I'd given Gareth Gates his stammer back.
I'm actually sweating just thinking about that. It was horrendous. It was a horrendous, like, interviews when they're going south. You've got a bail on them, but we couldn't. And
especially live and under that pressure and everything. I can only imagine the circumstances there. But on a different note, you mentioned your beloved Southampton Football Club. You're a massive fan of the Saints. Obviously, you've worked for them as well. But I really wanted to ask you about Eurofan, because this was something that you did for quite a few years, and you were getting sent out to all sorts of countries, stadiums, teams, watching games, meeting fans, traveling all over the world, having probably the best football fan experience ever. What was that like? Because you must have just got to experience like these mad things, mad games, seeing different cultures, fans, and all that kind of thing along with it.
Yeah, it was genuinely the best job I ever had. I genuinely still sad that it had to come to an end. And it's the most sort of topic about my career that people ask about on Twitter. Like, every now and again, you get like, are you going to bring the Eurofan back? It's really not, up to me, but yes. I just reply politely, like, I would love to, mate. I would genuinely love to. Or when I was
Can't anymore. Yeah. Not in the EU anymore. So I can't, sorry.
Yeah, I'm not paying to do it out of my own pocket. Or people are like, oh, when I was at school, that, you know, I wanted to be the Eurofan, and it sort of inspired people to go and make like their vlogs and do it. But yeah, that came about from a producer at BBC Switch who went on to work for a football channel called Copper 90. And I kept telling him about the Edinburgh show that I was doing, which was about completing a football sticker album. And he was like, what are you going to do with that, you sad twat? And then I said, well, what am I going to do, mate? I'm going to get it signed. I'm going to travel the world. And he went, good luck getting North Korea signed. And I said, yes, mate, it will be difficult.
But I'll get it done.
Yeah, I will do it, because it's, you know. And then he said, oh, but that might actually work out for a show that we've got. We could combine it. And that's what happened. So you imagine, my job was to go to a Champions League match, support the home team, hang out with the fans, wear their kit, learn the songs. And yeah, I like went to Spartak Moscow in Russia, drank with the ultras, feared for my life, went to Turkey, thought it was all going to be over. They're like, are you from Leeds? No, I'm not from Leeds. Yeah, stubby, stubby. Like, very odd fans. awful, Yeah, like genuinely awful.
Yeah.
Like genuinely fearing for my life on a few occasions. But as a football fan, to sort of learn to support another team and actually go through those emotions where you're when they're losing or they score a goal, you're like, yeah, like I've said that I'm a fan for this 24 hours. And my key phrase was, let's get amongst it. Which was my phrase, which came about in Moscow because the police were coming and we needed to film that link. So like, Deco, you need to do this at a one take wonder. And I was like, one hit wonder. Remember the time I met Hoosiers? And they were like, not now. So I nailed it. I was like, Tom Deacon has traveled to the big place. Let's get amongst it. And that was coined the phrase. So people resonated with it, loved it because they're like, you get to go and watch football, support a different team. It was mad. And going to Brazil for the World Cup, and my co-host there was Maya Jama. I don't know if she's still presenting. I don't know what she's doing. No, I'd never hear it from her, but yeah.
I'd imagine she's aged terribly and looks awful now.
So
she doesn't.
It was bonkers and brilliant all in the same measure. Going to Bermuda to watch the island games and be who knew that happened?
No.
Did you have to go through the triangle or did you work your way around?
But I made it back. It's much to the disappointment of a few people.
Friends and family.
Mainly. But it was like in Brazil, going to a Fatboy Slim concert and hanging out with him before the gig. He is a madman. One of the things I thought was quite weird, his like agent slaps him across the face. It's his tradition. He's like, right, let's come on then. And he's like, this is what I do. I've done it for years. I'm like, okay, cool. And then his agent just slaps him across the face. And then he's just, you know, eat, sleep, rave, repeat.
I wonder if that's one of those things they used to do back in the House Martin days when he was in the House Martins, like, caravan of
but absolutely bonkers, like to the point where you do meet amazing people. I went to Malaga. That was the first ever Champions League game I went to, and there's a lot of expats that live out in Malaga, and they called the Giri Army, and they took
immigrants.
Exactly, get out. But they've got a strip of English bars, which I don't think the Spanish want, where people get excited. Like, we've got John Smith's on tap. Have you? Who cares? But I went out, hung out with those fans. They took me under their wing. And then I went back on a jolly just on my own for one weekend, which was all a blur. There's a guy called Spider from Chumbawamba who lives out there.
What?
No. Yeah. What?
Absolute legend. And he took me under his wing. What happens on the bus stays on the bus. Madness, genuine madness. I got in. We all had cocktails, like bottles of basically hooch to take into the ground and get pissed on. And the guy who carries the Malaga flag from one end of the stadium to the other got denied. He got caught with his drink. So they went, Deacon, you're up. And I'm like, no, that's not good. I'm a little bit tipsy. No, you're going to have to carry the flag. And we're talking a 10-foot flag. I'm running from one end of the stadium to the other with this flag for 25,000 Malaga fans in the stadium. And they told me, when you get to the other end, just wave it. Just wave it back and forth. The fans down there will let you know what to do. And, mate, unbelievable. So, like, to do mad things like that, incredible. And then that didn't lead on to working for Southampton Football Club. But obviously being a Southamptoner and being a fan and doing presenting work and work with their charity. And then that led to doing the match day hosting and being in the players' tunnel, trying not to take cheeky photos of Liverpool players or anyone else. Just a mad experience. And as a football fan, it's incredible.
Yeah, but I imagine as a kid, you know, growing up and watching football all the time, to have that kind of full circle moments is just mad to think back on.
Yeah, I mean, because in the first Eurofan, when someone would help me to understand about the home team I was supporting, I'd give them a Saints shirt as a kind of thank you. And they'd be like, what team is this? And I'm like, well, we've never been in the Champions League, but don't be a dick about it. It's a free shirt. Do you want it or not? You can wear it for five a side. Why are you being like that? But then to fast forward to being in the dugout at Southampton Football Club, Just mad, like a dream come true. And meant I didn't have to pay for a ticket, which is great because they were terrible at the time. But I remember getting onto the pitch one time for when they're doing the warm-up. I had to walk across the pitch. And the goalkeeper, Kevin Davis, who's the coach now at the time, he deliberately kicked the ball at me. So I've walked past him and he's deliberately kicked it and it's missed me. And then I turn back round to look at who's kicked the ball. And he does that thing where he just points to his feet, right? So the ball's next to me, pretty much, and he's pointing to his feet. So all I have to do is lay the ball back. It was like that one moment as a kid. Maybe if I put it right on his feet, they'll sign me. Like, I'm in my 30s. Yeah,
but I'm coming on half-time, I reckon. I'm going to come on.
This is it. This is your one moment. Don't fuck it up now, Tom. And I remember I took my time and I placed it, and it was like a golf shot. It just curved away from him, like the last 3 meters. And that my one big moment, and he looked at me, and he just shook his head. And but then, amazing. So yeah, I don't get to do it anymore. But yeah, such good fun at the time to do that.
Here's a question I had about Southampton FC. Have you ever met volley chip up and volley legend / anti-vax nutter Matt Le Sissier, by any chance?
Yes, I have. And
how was he? Did he have his shiny hat on at the time? Did he have the tin foil fully on?
Listen, I will not have anything said about Le God, because Le God was a hero growing up.
Oh yeah, and mine too. I was always disgusted he was never in the England team. But then I found out his opinions and thoughts, and I'm like, ah yes, keep him away from other people, for God's sake.
I think what we have to do here, guys, right? And I'm not just backing up my bestie, Matty. Do I have his number? Yeah, I do have his number. The point is, right? The point is, we must distinguish, like, separate the sportsman from what he thinks, all right? What we have to do is we have to say he was an absolute legend on the pitch and ignore the other stuff. But no, I did meet him. I did meet him at a kit launch. They got me down to pretend to be him and Franny Bernardi are Southampton legends. And they did a shot with him, Matt Le Sissier, where he's holding a goat, because for Southampton fans, he's the greatest of all time. They've given me a jacket, proper official Southampton jacket, red one. It's got my initials sewn in. And I'm like, this is an awesome jacket. And the woman running it was like, yeah, we'll need all the kit back in at the end. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I'm in this porter cabin with Matt Lettice and Franny Bernali. And they're like, right, that's the shoot done. And I'm getting on with them really well. And I'm chatting away. And they start taking off their jackets with their initials on. They start putting them in their bags. And I'm like, guys, I was a really uncool kid. I was like, guys, I think we've got to give those.
We've got to give those back.
And Matty Lettice just looked at me and went, no, we don't. And I went, you're right. So I took my jacket off, put it in my rucksack, and I was like, legends. Just got to hang out with Matt Lettice. You know, he's an absolute icon in Southampton. This is amazing. Get in my car. About 20 minutes later, I get a phone call. Hi, Tom. Just couldn't find your jacket. Is there any chance you could deliver it back to the stadium? I was like, oh. So I messaged Matt and I'm like, they've just asked for my kit back. And all I get is about 20 emojis laughing. And they didn't ask for mine back. And I'm like, ah. Oh. So legend. He's a legend. So
he's always been giving terrible advice to people. So he's constantly been telling people to take the wrong things when they shouldn't be taken, or not taking them when they should be taken them. I get it. It's a running theme with Letizia. But fair play to him. He can chip the ball up and volley it into the top right or left hand corner like nobody's fucking business.
Any new relationship I've got into, I say, oh, do you like football? I'm like, listen, let's watch Matt Letizia's 100 greatest goals together.
I watched that. I must have watched that.
Yeah, sometimes
he was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, it's either Cat YouTube videos or it's Matt Letizia's 100 goals. And do you know what? At the end of January, I'm doing an in conversation with Matt Letizia, and the same questions go through my head. Like, I don't necessarily agree with what he thinks, but yet I still have to do an interview with him and talk about his playing career, and then talk about what he's up to now, and try to avoid talking about Twitter. But fascinating when you have to, as an interviewer, what's my responsibility? In the same way that when I was on Capital, was it okay for me to play Chris Brown? I don't know. Like in that same thing where you're like, so my only way is I never back announce Chris Brown. And I think that's made a massive difference, guys. And I think we can all agree that my little bit of work here and there has played a massive part in Chris Brown's career.
I didn't. He was finished up until then, I think. And then, you know, between you and Little Dicky, I think you've really revived revived Chris Brown. So if anybody's got a problem with that, direct it at Tom Deacon Comedy on Twitter. So that's nothing to do with me or Morgan.
I don't know how this has gone. This has gone way off the rails. But
yeah, here's something I wanted to ask, Tom. Who are some of your favourite comics growing up? And how did you discover them?
I think I said earlier that my stepdad, watching comedy with him, loved Harry Hill, loved Jack D. Getting to work with Jack D was like brilliant, because I'd gone to, you know, like queued up after the show at Brighton and got an autograph. And I was like, it's Jack D. I've got my pro. Who buys a comedy program? This dickhead here buys a comedy program. £10 for that shite. Anyway, got it signed, and then to work with him years later. Amazing. So I still love it. And I only saw him maybe about 4 months ago. He was doing a work in progress show in front of 60 people. Epic, like one of the legends. But then I liked Louis C.K. and I can't like him anymore.
You can't admit to that anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I listened to him the other day.
It's fantastic.
Or I didn't listen to him the other day. Depends on how opinionated the listener is.
Oh, God.
I'm not going down this route, but it's only because we just talked about it 2 seconds ago. I remember being at a London members bar, and he was over in the corner with a little entourage of people. And this was before we knew what we know now.
And yeah, he didn't have his cock out, did he?
Yeah, he wasn't touching himself while talking to other people, putting them in an uncompromising situation, right? Yes, we all know what happened, right?
Yeah.
Wrong. But the comedy itself is very funny. So anyway, which is also weirder when he does the simulation of wanking in his stand-up now, which I can't watch. But the point is, he's over in the corner of the room, and I had that moment as a fan of his, do I go over or do I not go over? And I played it out. My mate who was with me was like, just go over and say you're a comic. I thought, well, that's a weird conversation start, isn't it? Hi, Louis C.K. I'm a stand-up comedian. My name's Tom. Nice to meet you. I love your work. And then go, or I go over and say, I'm really fan of your work. Like, so I just didn't go over. And so looking back on it, I made the right call.
Yeah, technically. But yeah, we've mentioned on this show before, because of, obviously, we had Stuart Richardson from Lost Profits on one of our earlier episodes.
Fantastic
episode. Talk about Lost Pro.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we talk about how we don't kind of want Lost Profits to be a dirty word, because, you know, we can separate them, those five, and the music from that one cunt.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you said that, because I listened to that episode, which I love, with your podcast, and I'm sorry I've said it so late into chatting with you guys, but I love it from when I'm doing stand-up gigs and I'm traveling, that I listen to you guys and I'm able to, like, you're in the car with me. That's the beautiful thing. So listening to that episode, I found it absolutely fascinating, and it was really insightful. And I remember, Sean, you might not remember this, but the Union Chapel, you were on with Lost Profits and King Blues, they were awesome. And I remember hanging out with you afterwards in that sort of green room. And yeah, it was just like an amazing gig. It's in a church in London. And you're like, oh, I was thinking, do I mention that gig, but just not mention who the last band were on? You know, and you go through your head. But I think with anything like the Louis C.K. thing, you have to confront it. Amazing comic. But he's done some shit and he's fucked up. And I know that he's maybe on the comeback. I don't know, but sometimes it's not for me to judge. But your question was, who's the funniest comedians I liked growing up? Louis C.K. was one of them. I even like Lee Evans. I've gone through my taste buds have changed to someone now. Like, you know, Tom Stade, absolutely adore watching him live. So yeah.
Like you said, with taste buds changing, I think that's happened with my, because I used to hate Lee Evans with a passion. Like, he's just funny and running about. Oh, he's not even funny. He's just trying to be funny and running about. But yeah, now as I've grown older, I get it and I understand what he was doing. And yeah, I just remember when I was a kid, I remember getting into comedy through, like I said, like parents watching stuff. And I remember Dave Allen and Jasper Carrot. I remember being surprisingly big into Jasper Carrot for somebody who's 10. But yeah, go on, Morg. Sorry, man.
No, but Tom, I've absolutely loved this conversation. Thank you so much for opening up on so many different insights into your life and career and everything. But just before you go, I mean, we've talked about so many mad experiences, and I was going to bring up one video I did see of you interviewing Bo and sat on a sofa, sat between Robbie Williams and Thierry Henry, which is a weird sentence. But like,
oh, of course.
The dynamic duo.
We're on that. That was because moving into esports for a little while and hosting F1 esports, that's kind of the job I do now. So during that old pandemic that we're still technically in, but not, there was no live sports. So they did this virtual Grand Prix and that was mad. Like, I'm hosting on Sky Sports main event, like, because there's nothing else on. And then it's my stupid face pops up. And then I couldn't believe it. I'm on Sky Sports. I'm not in a Sky Sports studio and I'm not on Sky Sports money, but there I am on Sky Sports. And I messaged my mates. I'm like, done it. Look at me on Sky Sports. I'm my best mate. And I think you've got to surround yourself with good people. He replied, he went, look at you on Sky Sports. Just think, it only took a pandemic.
Yeah. Think how many people have died for this to happen, Tom.
And I took it on board, but the Gfinity, the people who made that, they did an Amazon Prime Day and they were like, we're going to get some of the biggest stars, Anthony Towns, the basketball player, NBA. They had Letitia Buffoni. They had Mo Farah, who my opening comment is like, Mo, question for you, right? Because sometimes I get quite confident, like I know these people. He pops up and I'm like, Mo, question for you. What do you think about when you're running? Because I did a 5K today and I found it very difficult. And my girlfriend who was there with me was like, you're an idiot. Like, Mo Farah. And he was like, oh, I don't know really. And I'm like, do you listen to music? Do you, what goes through your head? Because I can't. About 4K in, this is one of the best long distance runners being asked a stupid question by me. And Robbie Williams is there. So here's a quick back date. Doing that Copper 90 Euro fan show, I went to America and managed to piss off Thierry Henry quite badly, to the point where he refused to do an interview with me. It's got, I think, about a million views on YouTube. We went to a hotel trying to pretend that we were looking for Thierry Henry, knowing that he wouldn't be there, but actually he is actually in the reception with Australian footballer Tim Cahill, angry little terrier man. And my cameraman who's with me just starts filming over at them. Tim Cahill comes over and he's like, what are you filming for? And I was like, oh, we're just doing this show, Copper 90. It's just like, because we were hoping to meet Thierry, and it's like, can I possibly get an autograph? He's like, no. And if you don't stop filming, I'll rep the camera around your head. So, okay, cool. That's gone well. And then we saw him another couple of days, hated me. The point is, fast forward to when I'm meeting him. Luckily, he didn't remember. So because I've changed my haircut and the way I look, I've got away with it. And as you say, sandwiched between him and Robbie Williams. And when I met Robbie Williams, I got introduced as Tom, but he called me Chris. And that's how I'm remembered now to Robbie Williams. Every time he'd see me during that live show, he'd be like, Chris, you're doing such a good job. And I was like, thank you, Robbie. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Nice one, Gary. Cheers, buddy.
Yeah, that could have been. But with all that as well, I mean, what else can we expect coming up with you now? What's the rest of 2022 looking like?
Yeah, because I read that before the pandemic, you were set to record your first stand-up special.
Yeah, wasn't I just? I was off to New Zealand, going to do a new show called Rapture. And then I sort of stayed.
The Rapture came.
Yeah.
Isn't it ironic?
Oh.
Don't you think? So that was going to be on Next Up. I was going to record that. And like the likes of, you know, the big stand-up comics, they record a new hour and then burn that material. I've been in this kind of limbo where I haven't been able to burn it or get rid of it. So I'm still doing it because it's not out there. I hope that will come around again. And other things, more presenting jobs, hopefully, will come up. And yeah, it's just a day-to-day struggle, guys. So if you want an average comedian for, I don't know, your bar mitzvah or your wedding, just get in touch with my agent and he takes a fat 40%. So yeah, let's make everyone happy.
How much?
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, so look, I mean, like every year for a comic, it's just about getting gigs, and I would love to record that our show and put it out somewhere, and yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, fingers crossed that can happen for you, man. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time for doing this. It's been lovely my behalf to meet you. I've loved these stories, and I know Sean's really enjoyed taking a trip down memory lane with you as well.
Yes, this has been fucking fantastic, Tom. Thank you for everything. Thank you for the friendship. Thank you for the laughs. And yeah, I just love fucking seeing you, and I love hanging out with you. And there's the dog.
Just on time, just to say that's you've had an hour and 20 minutes or so now. I need to go outside in the rain and have a walk, because that's my life now. That's another part of 2022, is having a dog that debilitates your life. But that's my girlfriend's choice, and it was my choice as well, apparently. So the point is, we've got the dog now, and I'm enjoying my life. No, genuinely an absolute pleasure, gentlemen, to be on the show, and you're doing amazing stuff. And hey, definitely next time I'm doing a live gig, which is in Cardiff very shortly, come along.
Yes, please do. Yes, please. I'm there. Yes, thank you very, very much. And yeah, hopefully see you soon.
Bye. Sorry about the dog.
You're listening to Sapin Podcast! Yes!
You were shaking with excitement then. You were that happy from that conversation and catching up with your good friend that you've got the shakes.
Yes, I love him. He's fantastic. I love spending time with him. I love seeing his face. That was enough for me. But Uriah's voice is always good as well, which is lucky for somebody who does stand-up comedian and presenting. Lucky that he's got a voice, because otherwise it wouldn't work with it. But yes, thanks again to Tom for coming on. What a chat. We'll do another one soon. He messaged me yesterday to say that he's going to see Newport County play one of the days he's doing comedy in Cardiff.
All right, yeah.
He didn't ask if I wanted to go, if we wanted to go. Oh. He just told me he's going in, and I was like, Good luck. Nothing like getting stabbed before a gig.
Oh, okay. I sadly didn't invite... Oh, we could have done a podcast live from the football. That would have been...
Well, there's no... Oh, hey, it haven't happened yet. We still could do it. Is it the Vetch? Or is that Swansea? I don't know.
No, Swansea's old ground. I think it's... Oh, anyway.
Something road. No? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, we might go to Newport with him and... perhaps we could do like a Euro fan, a Welsh fan special with us. So we put it up on the Patreon. Check out patreon.com/that's happening. Yeah.
Nice. Well, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, lovely for me to meet Tom doing this. I know obviously he's got a great connection with you. You guys go way back. You seem very good friends. And it's just nice to see a genuine, lovely person like this achieve amazing things and just having a great, great time. Another thing I wanted to mention was, of course, that 519 show. We talked about, you know, the Blackouts appearance among with all these top stars from 2009, 2010 and all that. But there's a clip on YouTube from that show called Rory's Rockstar Safari, right? I encourage everybody to go to YouTube after this episode is finished and go and watch that, because it's literally, how would you describe it, Sean? Literally just the six of you from the Blackout just running in a safari. Crazy.
Basically, I think they said to us, sit by there, boys. We're going to put you on a green screen. And then didn't tell us what it was. And then Tom goes and overdubs it in what I would call a racist Welsh impression. I don't know if you can be racist to the Welsh, but it did feel like that with the impression. But very good, very funny. I don't know how that show ever got made, because it was fucking chaos from the moment we got there, really early in the morning, till the moment it ended. But it was so, so fun. Check it out. Listen, if you do check it out and you get offended by anything that happens on the show, right? Sorry, not my fault. It exists. And times have changed. So, yeah, check it out. It's a good laugh. Yeah, times have changed, but that doesn't mean I forgive Elvis like everybody else. Anyway, let's move on.
That's a completely different rant. But of course, you can check out Tom's work on all his social media pages. We would say his website, but as we mentioned, he needs it updated. He's got a lot of comedy gigs coming up as well, so make sure to check out if he's appearing near you very soon.
Go and see him. He's fucking brilliant.
Soon.
He's super fun. He's a good lad.
Yes, and make sure to give us a follow on our social media pages at Sappening Pod on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with everything going on in the world of Sappening Podcast.
Yes, that's at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. Please check it out. Send us questions, send us guest ideas. And
as we always mention, our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sappening. Look, there's loads of extra bonuses on there.
Look.
We cannot stress enough.
Look. I know we mention, I know we fucking beg every week, right? But look, you sounded then like you were running out of money. Now, look, if you don't sign up to the Patreon today, I don't know if I can eat, which means I don't know if I can put this podcast out Friday. Look.
Might just start doing that with guests. Look, right? But no, our community is absolutely wonderful. People in there are superstars. They're meeting up, they're sending each other's gifts. I saw that Andrew Keach in the group got a specialized Simpsons mug, and I had to reply on our Instagram being like, I'm a big fan of that. And they're doing loads of stuff like that throughout the group. So get involved. You can get gifts from each other, make some new friends, and just have a giant laugh with us as well. So that's patreon.com/Sappening. If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names from there that we do thank. But of course, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sappening Podcast Patreon community.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Unity.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liuwe, Janelle Caston, Amadine Urbano, Mitch Perry, Kelly Ewan, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Young, Paul Hirschfield, Natasha Morris, Emma Barber, Nathan Croshaw, Sammy G, Tony Michael, Kat Besson, Captain Honorable, Dana Lazanova, Jerry Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Johnny Phillips, Scott Jones, Amy Campion, Alexandra Pemblinton, Mikey McDonald's McMuffin Buns, Tom Owen, Caroline Robinson, Chris Howard, M. Evans Roberts, Louis Cook, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, Martina McManus, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Kelly Cannon, Lucy Deeds, Emily Perry, John and Emma, Becky Andy, Jason Heredia, Stuart McNaught, Craig Harris, Adam King of the Goss Parcelor, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, what did Spartacus say when the lion ate his wife? Nothing. He was a gladiator, crisp. He was gladiator.
He's gladiator. Yes.
Do you know what? I'm closing the Patreon down. Josh has ruined it now for him. No, only joking. Thank you very much. Alice Wood, Reese Bowring, Keris Andrews, Connor Lewis, Kit Stevenson. Danielle, I have nothing to say this time. I am just writing this so you have even more to say, Stevenson. Hey, Dan, don't do that. And last but no means least, thank you very much to Kyle David Smith.
Woo!
And before we finish, Morg, I'd just like to say another special thank you. Thank you very much to the members of Every Time I Die, who have this week called it a day. It doesn't look like it's ended amicably. Would help if I could say that word. But yeah, what an absolute run for a band. That last record is unbelievable as well. So they've gone out on a high, and I just want to say thank you very much for the inspiration, for the tunes, and for the years and years of gigs. Thank you very much to everybody involved with Every Time I Die. I hope you somehow manage to all get along at some point and do another show.
Yeah, it's been very upsetting to see all of that unfold, but we just want to say a massive thank you and that we love them because the band have been very nice to us. We've done episodes with Jordan and Andy from the band you can go back and listen to, and we even had the famous producer Machine on talking about some of their early records as well. So if you'd like some, take a trip down memory lane about Every Time I Die, go and check that out on the Sapling Podcast platforms, and hopefully something will come good of all of this eventually. But yeah,
what a sad end. sorry guys, see you next week, I guess.
Be more cheery. Slapman.
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.